Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together, and I hope to hear from you, but the first hour will be an absolute joy, I can tell already. It's been one of those days. Wait a minute. I say wait a minute because this is the second Coca-Cola that has opened on everything. If I had show prep, it would all be history by now, but fortunately, I just wing it. In any event, without further ado, and before anything else untoward happens, and I do expect it at any moment, we welcome Steve Probst to WGN Radio. Steve, how are you?
What a setup. I hope I'm not the reason.
Oh, no, it's been like this for a couple of weeks. Windows 11 and I have been fighting over networking, and that's not an unusual story, I'm sure. But in the mix, everything has possibly gone wrong that could. And so, today has been spill everything over everything day. So I'm not 100% sure, but I spilled nothing over what was the first rock and roll record, and I do want to get to that. But before I do, I've been trying to order Ruben Molina's book, and as you know, the Facebook thing seems to be out of print. But I found a site that has it, and I thought to myself, well, how dangerous could this be? But, because you just never know what you're getting on these sites. But I figured I'd ask you, have you ever heard of Sonic Market Shop?
No, that's one I've missed, but you can order it from Ruben. Even though it was sold out, he told me that he re-upped the order and has books on hand. So
is that Post Office Box 6074, La Puente, California 91747? Can you do it online?
I memorized it.
Yeah.
It is La Puente, so yeah. I assume that's the good address, and I would contact him through Facebook. If you're a Facebook friend, you can direct message him and check it out that way.
Okay.
Tell him that I told you that he told me that he re-upped the book and actually added a couple of sections or a few additions to the new I guess you'd call it improved work that I think is constantly evolving.
Oh, great.
Cha-cha-cha.
Great. Okay. You know, I went to his Facebook page and, of course, saw your review, among other things, and did not see, because in the past he had a thing where you can order it, and all that. So I will have somebody who does Facebook message him. So I lurk under other people's IDs. So,
I think he removed the order part because he did run out, but then he ordered a reprint, and it's actually a couple of things that aren't in the original one, so
good.
You get an improved version. Maybe you'll have it next time. We can talk about it.
Yeah, and he is making the rounds, lots of events, but one that I thought was really interesting and absolutely free is on August 30th, Sunday, from 2 to 3 at the L.A. Library downtown. And he's going to be there along with Melissa Duenas, who is doing the East Side Story project, which I don't know much about, and Oscar Garza, who is with USC's Arts Journalism Program. But do we know anything about the East Side Story project?
No, I don't know about that. Actually, that's a series of LPs.
Oh, okay.
That came out with various lowrider.
Yes, I have them.
Oh, you have them.
All of them.
Tell me about them.
Yeah, no, I have all of them. And as far as that goes, but I so she was creator of that. So it's just the vinyl and the CDs of that. Interesting. Did not.
Yeah, and Oscar Garza, he has a interesting take. Anybody that deals in used records has come across name tags on records. This record belongs to,
right,
Sally Smith, and it oftentimes gives an address, in some cases gives a phone number. Well, he made it his goal to write to some of these people and send them photocopies of the label and say, is this person still here, and what can you tell me about the records? Now,
this is
great. I think that's going to be part of his presentation, so I won't give it away. But that's sort of a variation on what Reuben did. You know, it's what you find on the label that wasn't on the record when it was first pressed up.
Wow, that is such a great idea, because all of us who have gone to the swap meets and everything else, and, used to be come January when the kids would go off to college, mom would take the records to the swap meet unbeknownst to the kid and sell them. And I got all the Yellow Atlantics that way for a dime each, which was pretty amazing. But I often wondered, a good smattering of my records have exactly that. Usually they were those return address label type things where it gave your name,
right,
and address. And I've always wondered, who is Joanne? Well, all that kind of,
right,
stuff. That's fascinating that he found them.
What cities they're in can be sort of helpful, too. One time I was looking for records in Santa Ana. I remember going into this thrift store, and I found some very rare records, including the El Reyes on Checker, the early variation on the Dells before they were the Dells, Darling I Know, great record, and somebody's name and address and phone number. I think they were in Fontana or somewhere in the Inland Empire. So I couldn't resist. I had to call up and say, do you have any more records? These were so great.
Yeah.
And the woman on the other end of the phone said, oh, my God, these are records that are stolen from us. And I didn't want to.
Oh, God.
I did not want to get involved in her little soap opera. So all I did is I gave her the name of the thrift store. And I say, if you go down there, you might find what's left of the records that once belonged to whatever relative it was. This was a long time ago, so I don't remember the particulars, but I don't think she, I think she wanted her records back. But,
right, and you were not about to do that, I don't think.
Well, it didn't work out that way, but I did tip her off as best I could where to find the remaining records, if there were any. But just great stuff.
Oh, yeah. What a great project. Well, that'd be a good date, and it's moderated by Oliver Wang, who apparently is a collector and a sociology professor at CS Long Beach.
I was thinking of going myself. I'm not sure that date is really a date I can show up there, but if things fall into place, well, maybe I'll, swing by and check out the happenings.
Well, it's interesting.
Reuben will draw a good crowd.
Oh, absolutely. And an hour later, actually, too, I guess, after that, he'll be in Echo Park at Story's Bookstore doing a signing.
Oh, he's pretty active. He just came back from Mexico, and he's been known to take his record-spinning show to Japan and more or less around the world. So guy's pretty active.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, we had a caller, Ken, who calls regularly, who decided he's forming a doo-wop group. He's looking for members. And he decided he'd call themselves the Enchantments. And I said, well, it is an original, and I could name 10. But when I started to look around, I came up with the Enchantments, who were on Pharaoh, an Eddie Davis label, with an answer record to Farmer John. Are you aware of this group?
Yeah, I can't tell you who was in it. It's the with two E's in chat, of course.
Yes.
That's a super rare record and pretty expensive record. It's probably the hardest to find and most sought after Pharaoh, F-A-R-O, label record of Eddie Davis's very active workshop.
Well,
you know, it so happens I don't have a copy. Darn it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was interesting, of course, because those Pharaoh records, Eddie had had the desire to put the group faces on all the records, as you know, because you've seen them. Well, there were 10 members of this group.
Right.
And they're all there, right there on the right-hand side of the record. So
it's called the Floating Head label.
Right, exactly. And that's exactly what it was. No Nicks. But
right. He had a black singer named Chick Carlton.
Sure.
Whom he teamed up with a couple of Mexican-Americans because he thought Chick Carlton was a very light-skinned black singer. So he thought that the skin colors would complement each other. That was, Floating Heads again. You know, he had to take care of business that way. I think he called the group the Majestics. There
right,
were several
right, another T-H-E-E. Groups. Yeah. And you mentioned Chick Carlton. He wrote I'm in Love with Your Daughter.
Yeah. Well, okay. Chick Carlton was part of that operation and, really a nice guy. I talked to him in the past. I don't know if he's still with us, but last I heard, I think he was in Vegas.
Okay.
Well, everybody ends up in Vegas.
Oh.
I mean, everybody.
Well, with California taxes, it'll be more than everybody soon. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, if in doubt, they're in Vegas.
Right. That's about it. So interesting stuff. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. I want to mention the Sea Crane Company. And if you like what we're talking about, then you obviously like radio. And if you like radio, well, you should know about the Sea Crane Company, and maybe you do. But right now, I want to mention the CC Pocket Radio. It's a great little transistor radio. It'll fit in your purse or your pocket either way. And you'll celebrate National Radio Day in style. That's tomorrow, by the way. And the CC Pocket is great. Firstly, I'm hard on my toys, and it's indestructible. Mine still plays, which is a miracle. It's very lightweight. It's durable. It's easy to hold. It's got rubber sides and a pocket clip. But what it's really got that makes this radio terrific is it's got terrific reception, AM and FM. It'll beat most anything else other than other Sea Crane radios completely out of the game. It's just terrific. It's got 5 memory button presets, there you go, and a timer and an alarm and a dial light and all those things. It's also got the weather band and weather alerts, so it makes a good little emergency radio too, and easy to operate, no learning curve. You can go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Look at the CC Radio Pocket. If you cannot go online, well, they've got great customer service, and that's good if you've got questions too. And that's 800-522-8863, 800-522-TUNE, 800-522-TUNE. And if you can go online, though, definitely ccradio.com. It's a repository of information as well as great radio products, and the CC Pocket is just one of them. If you do that, you tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
Let's go.
the one and only record by the Enchantments, the A-side anyway, on Feral Records. It's WGN Radio. We're talking to Steve Propes. And I should first ask, do you have any projects you're working on right now?
I'm always working on something, but it's sort of a long-distance project. Let me point out about that record.
Yeah.
That's a favorite. I think it's expensive because it's a Northern Soul want list type of record. It's sort of Farmer John with strings and a smoother delivery instead of the, more basic rock and roll delivery. So I can see that being a Northern Soul favorite, that dance beat, that
right.
backbeat that, brought you, in this case, by Eddie Davis, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that Northern Soul, that was my biggest disappointment when I first found out about the all-nighters. I thought this was so good because it was my hours and everything, and I thought, how neat all these, and then I found out that the beat they're looking for was because they were all on amphetamines.
Yeah,
and
that's why
the cops shut him down. Because I thought, well, why would they shut down Wiggins Casino? You know, all that, and that was the deal. And how sad.
Short lifespans.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, exactly. But Northern Soul is still, even though the all-nighters are gone, Northern Soul still is big. So while we're speaking, I just went to Disco's to see. Yeah, it's pricey, all right. Available from, individual sellers, from $811 to $1,500. I don't like it that much.
Yeah, it's a great record, but I'll let others enjoy the vinyl.
Yes,
You can check out the YouTube or whatever. But I hadn't thought about it that much, but it has a lot of the elements of Farmer John without the cranking rock and roll. It's a lot smoother. It's sort of like a Drifters type of arrangement. I was thinking about the Floating Heads label.
Yeah.
RCA actually participated in the game when they put out a promo of Neil Sedaka singing The Diary because they wanted disc jockeys to know it wasn't Little Anthony.
Oh, God. Well, at least it wasn't as bad as Wayne Newton when they wanted them to know he was a guy. So.
Yeah, right. But when I first heard The Diary by Neil Sedaka, I thought, I think Little Anthony did have The Diary first, and Neil Sedaka covered him. So, RCA, just wanted to let him know that Little Anthony is not with RCA. It's a wholly different person.
Well, that's interesting, because I had always assumed that Neil Sedaka wrote it with Howie Greenfield. So I guess...
Well, maybe he did.
Yeah,
but,
so
that doesn't mean he recorded it first.
Absolutely right. And he would have loved for Little Anthony to be a hit. And that's where we'll pick it up, right after the news, right here on WGN Radio.
You care for.
Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and there it is, the first recording of The Diary, Little Anthony and the Imperials. And we're talking to Steve Probst. I told you he knows all. And if you've got any questions or comments, very often you ask me stuff, and I don't know. Well, Steve probably will. So 888-876-5593-8888-R-O-L-L-Y-E. And it's interesting about that, because looking at the dates of this, Steve, this would have been when Neil Sedaka was just a staff writer for Donnie Kirshner. And so
Actually, he had a couple of things happening before that. I think his first record was I Go Ape.
Which did nothing. Yeah, he absolutely did. But as far, as far as big hits under his own name, I guess it was because George Goldner, who, of course, put it on end, they pitched... pitched Little Anthony, but George didn't like the recording. He didn't think the production worked, and he wouldn't promote it. So with that in mind, from what I understand, that's when Neil Sedaka went himself to RCA and managed.
Okay, well, that makes sense, but I guess if RCA is interested in you in those days, you don't give it a second thought. You know, you follow the example of...
Well, exactly.
People like Elvis Presley, right, for instance.
Right. And just distribution alone, getting a label that has distribution, that's everything. So,
Now, there's a lot to the Neil Sedaka story. And, I guess you'd call that sort of doo-wop, but from doo-wop to disco, he was... His career was pretty impressive.
Well, and it was really a Cinderella story in the 70s, because he was very cold for a while there. And then when Kevin and Tennille recorded Love Will Keep Us Together and it got so high on the charts, that really restarted him.
I heard an interview with him after he passed, and he credited Elton John.
I would agree that, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He's 100% right. And there wouldn't have been no Captain Hill recording it if it weren't for the Elton John connection. But, you know, as far as hits in this country, I think that's what did it. And I like some of his 70s stuff, like Amarillo and stuff. It never really hit. And I loved when he redid his Breaking Up His Heart. Yes, as a ballad. It was just terrific.
So. It was sort of originally a cha-cha. And, he slowed it down, and it really worked. So, now and again, lightning can strike twice.
Well, absolutely. And I admit, when we talk Wimpy White records, there aren't many that I love, but my favorite Wimpy White record is still Alice in Wonderland by Neil Sedaka. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's known now across the board.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, what's my favorite Wimpy White record? We're going to have to...
I'd love to know.
Postpone. Yeah. Maybe, I wouldn't call Angel Baby a
No.
In fact, I just saw on the internet tonight, and I guess it's no secret because he publicized it, my friend Ruben Molina is starting a project that calls Rosie. So
I saw that too. And that record is a mystery. It's a mystery how it became as popular as it did and where it wound up and all those things. You know, to the uninitiated, they play it and say, "What the?" But man, absolutely. You know, it was one of John Lennon's favorite records, though. Just loved it.
And, the final 50s records that were played by K Earth, if you can believe this, K Earth was once a 50s station.
Yeah.
Hard to believe when you listen to it now, were Tequila, La Bamba, and Angel Baby. Those were the last holdouts that kept getting action on K Earth before they became rock of the 80s or whatever they are now.
I'm not surprised, not at all. And you know, even in the 70s and the early 80s, they went away from that. They were a little too hip for the room. And then in the 90s, they came back and added that stuff. But another mystery was when they hired Huggy Boy, who arguably was a terrible disc jockey, but had tremendous music taste, and wouldn't let him pick his own records. It's like, why would you do that?
When they shut down KRLA, you remember KRLA?
Oh, very well.
he was the His show was the only one that actually got ratings. So, K-Earth booted that, effectively shut down that OnePlus by, you know, sort of consigning him to whatever. You know, I never really talked to him about it, but I don't think it was a real pleasant experience for him.
No, it paid the bills, period, and you can't argue with that. But there was obviously no soul and no love. But just the idea that you'd hire a guy who really was a rotten jock and then not let him do the one thing he did, which is pick the music, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know, Huggy, that's the role Huggy should have been in charge of. You're right, because he knew L.A. music backwards
absolutely.
And forwards.
Yeah, you know, Art LeBeau gets a lot of credit, and rightfully so, but the reality is that Art LeBeau was a businessman, and he understood how to market it and how to treat it as a business. Huggy Boy was clueless about that way, but arguably, if I had to put the two of them in the room, I'm going with Huggy Boy.
I'll tell you something that was pointed out to me, and I haven't verified this, but it's been said that at least towards the latter part of it, maybe the earlier part of his career, too, Art LeBeau specialized in records he had a piece of.
Well, of course. And he'd buy whole labels, you know, like when he bought Calico and things like that, of course. And he had the clubs that he owned and the labels. And, I mean, he absolutely was a businessman. And he came up with Oldies But Goodies, you know, a lot of things that he did that were wonderful. But it was always from a business sense. When he was so big at KRLA, there was always someone behind him. Maybe it was a Sherman Cohen or whoever, someone who really knew the music.
Yeah, and I don't think he would deny it either.
No,
I
mean, he didn't. You're 100% right.
Yeah, what's the problem? I mean, come on, I am a businessman.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly. You know, so. But it killed Huggy because, of course, you know, we've talked before when Huggy Boy was in trouble for not paying taxes, and he said to the judge, I didn't know I was supposed to give the government a cut. It was the most sincere line he ever said, and that kind of summed his business acumen right there. But LeBeau, yeah, he marketed all the way, and I don't deny him anything because without him, some of those records we would have never heard.
Yeah. You're right. Particularly, yeah, the first couple of Oldies But Goodies LPs. The other thing that sort of drove me crazy is he'd put out Volume 1 10 years later and all the tracks would be different.
I know. Well,
thank you, Art. Yeah. Totally, you know, Heaven and Paradise suddenly disappeared.
Right. Yeah, no, those are the details. Oh, actually, Stan in Dearborn wants to join us. And Stan absolutely knows his stuff, certainly the doo-wop stuff. He had a radio show in Detroit for quite a while. So, Stan, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh, and hi, Steve.
Hello.
Glad to hear you on again.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, one of my favorite L.A. groups is Arthur Lee May and the Crowns.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And I've got records on, like, RPM and Specialty and Dig, so many different labels. I was just wondering, also because he was a pro baseball player and only recorded in the offseason, is that why he has on so many different labels?
It's also why he wasn't a bigger star.
Yeah.
Because he didn't devote his entire career to making himself a star. You know, I think he actually preferred the baseball part of his life. And, you know, one heck of a nice guy. I mean, him and Richard Berry were running partners, and nobody has ever said anything bad about Arthur Lee May.
Yeah.
He was on, you're right, he was on Dig Records. He was part of the J.O.'s, Johnny Otis, sort of impromptu group that did a song called Tough Enough.
Right.
And also did that LP on Dig that, you know, pretty collectible. And you're right, he was on RPM and, you know, a whole bunch of labels. And, Specialty, Gloria was with Richard Berry singing. It was more or less a duet about Gloria Jones of the Blossoms. So that's my little Arthur Lee May pitch.
Yeah, and of course, Richard Berry was one of the Crowns. So,
that was my next question. I have on Flip, it's got Richard Berry as co-writer, or the writer on Hey Pretty Girl on Flip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, if you got that Flip record, that's one of the few Flip records I don't have. And that's a pretty pretty hard to find record. So congratulations on that. I did an interview on Channel 11 here in the L.A. area with Tony Valdez, and he wanted me to find somebody that was around in the 50s to, you know, celebrate a theme. And I contacted Arthur Lee May, and he came down, and we did an interview together with Tony Valdez on Channel 11. That was the last time I saw Arthur Lee.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Was he promoted as a baseball player as well, you know, during his career out like on the radio? Was he popular in L.A. as a ball player as well as a singer at the time?
I don't know how popular he was in L.A. as a ball player, because in those days, sports didn't get the saturation it does now.
Oh, yeah.
And he never played for an L.A. team. Of course, there weren't any L.A. teams, major league teams,
At the time, anyway.
When he started out.
Right.
I think he was drafted in the expansion draft by the Angels in 1960.
Right, but the Angels weren't there in 55.
Right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
He was on Flair originally, I think, and then Modern. And so,
Don't know about the Flair part.
Well, wasn't he part of the Five Hearts and the Rams?
Oh, yeah, but the Rams.
Yeah, I was talking about under his name.
Oh, under his own. Yeah, okay, yeah, no.
Yeah, his first stuff was on
Modern.
Yeah, Modern.
Yeah, and then RPM and Specialty and Dig and Flip and Cash and Jamie and Tower and Ampar and on and on. Buddha, I think, was the last.
You got it all memorized, don't you?
Yes, I do.
On Cash, it just says Lee May rather than Arthur Lee May.
Yeah.
And then on Specialty, it's Arthur Lee May and the Crowns.
Right.
And some of them give the Crowns credit and some don't. But I think
that's a source of confusion, too, because there was another ball player by the name of Lee May who played, I think, for the Astros. So people,
and the Orioles,
conflate the two names. The one record that Arthur Lee May
It isn't the same person?
No.
I don't think so.
Too different.
Really?
Maybe that's why Lee May. Well, I don't know, because he came a little bit later, and he might have recorded too. That's where there's that Lennox record. I don't know if that's Arthur Lee May or Lee May trying to, hitch on to Arthur Lee May's popularity.
Yeah.
The one thing I remember about Arthur Lee May, and I talked to him about it. He did a song called Truly, which was imitation of Sincerely. It wasn't the most original material, right, but it was a pretty nice record.
Well, here, I just looked up the problem here about Lee May, because I was saying, I know they're the same person. Well, they are, but then there was another Lee May without an E at the end of his name who was a baseball player.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So,
that's what I'm thinking of.
So some of the Arthur Lee May stuff was credited to Lee May. So if there's an E at the end of it, it's Arthur. If there isn't an E at the end of it, it's not. So I know cliff notes are needed for this.
You solved the mystery of the ages.
Yes, how about that? God, I know next will be the grand unified theory. Hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay where you are.
Okay.
And we're running out of time, and I just hate that. So, but I'll be quiet on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, we're going to forego the bumper. Hard to believe when we're talking about music, but I don't want to interrupt either Steve Probst or Stan from Dearborn. So there you go, guys. Carry on.
I had Arthur Lee May's baseball card from the 1957 season when he was with the Braves, and on the back of his card, it showed him with a microphone and a record surround him, and like a caricature of him.
Well, that's great.
I always remember that. And I think he was on
Let me ask you about Detroit. How ubiquitous was Fortune Records? It's a big deal nationally. I know know that among collectors, but how potent was Fortune in the Detroit area during your day?
Fortune was Detroit.
Yeah.
That's all you could put it. And then when Motown came around, well, Fortune was still Detroit until Motown got national.
Did you ever go to the Fortune store?
Yeah. Yeah, it was on 3rd Avenue. It was a kind of a run-down place, but I didn't go to it till the 60s. I didn't hit the 50s.
Well, I'm sure they were still. They had a Village of Love was a National Hit 64.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I think that came out in 61 or 2. They had a...
Okay, 62.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were still very active then. So, I understand that Devorah Brown was a pretty pretty nice person to, you know...
She was nice. She was just a little bit flipped out, I thought.
Yeah, but you know, all of the acts to a person say she treated them all well, and they were always welcome at her house, and if they were having dinner, they'd be just as invited as anybody else, so there was never a barrier there with her. And it didn't even occur to her, which I thought was much to her credit. And whatever creativity was in that couple, it was her, much more than her husband. But her son, I guess, got the stuff. And I know the building's not there anymore, neither is the first one. But they're
right.
Yeah.
Well, her daughter lived out here not too far from me, and she contacted me and sent me sort of a care package.
Oh, my God.
She was trying to re-promote the label. They actually did repress The Way You Dog Me Around and called it The Way You Dog Me Around 1970. So, you know, on colored vinyl and everything. So she was trying to put out a product that would interest people at her level, but I think she passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But no, Smokey Robinson, when he was younger, actually said, if I could sing, I'd be Nolan Brown.
And Nolan Strong.
I'm sorry,
Nolan Strong.
Yeah, Nolan Strong. Yeah, yes,
she's noted for opening up the studio in the back and just letting the guys go in there and say, "Okay, guys, do your thing." She had nothing to do with the recording. They were totally in charge of what they were doing. And when it sounds like sizzling bacon in the background, that's because that's what they were doing.
Yeah, because it is. Exactly. New meaning to bacon fat. I cannot believe we've ended the hour, so we have to have part two when you come back, Steve. And Stan, always good to hear from you, and I expect you'll be in attendance as well.
Yeah, thank you.
That was great.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. And Steve, yes, I'll follow up on Ruben and look forward to our next conversation.
Okay, will do. Okay.
All right, and then we'll pick it up next hour. Free for all. If it's on your mind, it'll be mine. We can continue this discussion if you want. Coming up on WGN Radio.